We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 120. Scott, it was a fun weekend of spring training baseball. I don't know about you. There were grown men on fields throwing baseballs and hitting baseballs.
There were.
It was fun
to
see.
There were lots of grown men throwing and hitting baseballs, and it was almost real. It wasn't, you know, it doesn't count towards any statistics or anything like that, but it was real live play, and it was fun to watch. I'm happy that spring training has started. We actually get to see these guys now implement what their off-season workouts and all these the workout videos that we've been looking at for months, and now we get to see them throw and hit baseballs. So it's tremendous.
I was thinking about this over the weekend as I was listening to John and Susan on the Saturday broadcast. They kind of got me thinking about it. Think about seasons past of spring trainings, basically the last 15 years of spring training, after the starters like A-Rod and Jeter and Teixeira and whoever's pitching goes out. It's a bunch of nobodies that we don't give a crap
right.
about. Now, not only do we care about the young guys starting, but we can't wait to see Frazier come in. We can't wait to see Torres come in. We can't wait to see Mateo come in. It's really exciting. I kind of joked that I was saying that I might have split screen all season going with the Yankees and then Scranton, or even the Thunder games going on this
season. Yeah, I was
going
to say, it goes all the way even to Tampa. I mean, Blake Rutherford's probably going to be in Tampa, and I want to see what he's doing. So, yeah, it's definitely an interesting spring training because I don't remember – well, definitely when we had a good system back in the early 90s, there wasn't this much coverage. We weren't – we didn't have the availability to watch all these spring training games and watch them.
Plus, I was three.
Yeah, well, I
was 3 years old, wasn't really watching
I was games. Actually watching television at that point. I was a real person, almost. But yeah, now that we have this, you know, unbelievable farm system that's like the greatest farm system ever assembled, we get to watch it, and you're right. Inning one is exciting, and inning nine is exciting. So this is good stuff.
Can't miss farm system, right? Nothing will go wrong.
No, there's too many. That's my deal. I love it. It's like a buck.
Law of averages state that something's going to have to go right. And if it doesn't, then that's just really horrible.
Exactly. It's like a buckshot. Like a few of them are going to hit, you know, whatever you're shooting at, like a squirrel, for instance, a few of them are going to hit.
Do we have an update?
Oh, geez. He disappeared on me, man. I'm a little disappointed.
Oh.
So I don't know if he's dying.
Conspiracy theory.
I don't know if he's dying.
He heard. He's a listener of the Bronx Pinstripe Show, and he heard you're after
it's
his ass.
It's possible. There's a squirrel community who's talking about it. So I don't know if he's dying in a corner somewhere or he's dead, but I did see some remnants of wood on my back deck on Sunday. So that sumbitch is coming back a little bit. And then he's gone again. So now he's just completely messing with me.
All right. This week's fan shop code for 25% off will be Severino. I think we're going to be talking about Severino a bunch in this episode, along with the competition for the fourth and fifth starters. So use code Severino for 25% off. You can go to shop.bronxpinstripes.com. That's the fan shop. A ton of awesome gear in there. And Scott, I would love it if people show up to spring training on March 24th and 25th wearing a Bronx Pinstripes t-shirt. That would be freaking awesome.
That is the goal, no doubt about it. Get your gear. I know we've sent a bunch of stuff down to Tampa and from other people who have said that they're going to be going down at that time. So so I have a feeling we're going to see some sweet gear rocked out on those 2 days.
We're going to be at the games on the 24th and 25th. That's a Friday and a Saturday. Post-game on Friday, we're going to meet up at a bar or brewery in Seminole Heights. That's where our house is. Still TBD on what bar or brewery. We got a couple in mind. We kind of just need to work out the details, so stay tuned on that. Obviously, also, if you're going to the game and you want to grab a beer during the game, we will do that as well. But then on Saturday, we are going to be in the right field bar area the entire game, so find us there. And I know the new renovations to the stadium, to the spring training stadium, look pretty sweet from all the pictures I've seen.
Yeah, I like the fact that you can walk all the way around the stadium. That's something you can't do in the Bronx. So the fact that you can walk, do it, get a three.
Well, you can. You just have to walk by the men's room.
Yeah. Well, you have now. You can get a 360 view and actually take a look at some of the guys in pinstripes 360 while have a view the entire time. And that's something nice. You know, that's kind of cool. Maybe we'll end up in a cabana somehow on Saturday. Who knows?
You're gonna splurge
with some ahi tuna and a bottle of Dom. Who knows, man? You know, you never know what'll happen.
You think they got Cabana boys or Cabana girls working those cabanas?
I have to imagine that the New York Yankees have both. I have a feeling that they're looking.
I mean, it's 2017. Some people want Cabana boys.
I agree. I know. I sent a tweet out
that there's anything wrong with that.
I sent a tweet out during one of the games asking the Yankees where the application was for people who wanted to apply for Cabana boy / girl. I did not get a response.
I think you're thinking a little bit too highly of yourself.
No. I made sure I said in the tweet, I was asking for a friend.
You ready to overreact and overanalyze some stuff that happened this weekend?
That is exactly what this weekend's for. That's what this show is about. To get hyped up.
What good is the first weekend of spring training if you're not going to treat it like this is how the entire season is going to play out?
Yeah, definitely. Zeros across the board with our pitching staff. That's what I'm looking for.
I expect a zero ERA out of the starting rotation then for the entire season. First things first, the lineup in game one was pretty much, I think, going to be the opening day lineup, with the exception of Jacoby Ellsbury, who welcomed his new baby daughter, Crew. I don't know if you saw that, but he named her Crew. Interesting name.
Congratulations to Kobe.
A lot of J. Crew jokes.
Oh, J. Crew. Yeah, God. Wow.
Yeah.
Wowzers.
Cruiseberry. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I said it was up there with Soda and Seven. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so Ellsbury was not in the lineup. Gardner was in center field leading off. Didi batting second, which I loved. Yeah. We'll get into that in a second. At short, Sanchez, Holiday, Bird, Castro, Headley, Hicks in left field, and then Judge batting ninth in right field. We got an Instagram question from Fill Up for yous in there. What do y'all think or hope the batting order will look like? I'm going to lose it if Ellsbury and Gardner are 1 and 2 this year. I'm hoping Didi is the number two hitter. I just said I loved that Didi was batting second. I think he's the perfect number two hitter for this team for a few reasons. First, I think that he's going to get a lot of good pitches to hit. Hitting second ahead of Sanchez and Holiday and Bird. Also, he can hit lefties and righties. He actually had better numbers against lefties last year, so I have no problem about that. He's quick, and I just think that he's going to be taking the next step this year. I'm sick of seeing Gardner and Ellsbury. I know the Yankees try to sell us this crap that, oh, Gardner and Ellsbury are the starters for this team, and when they're both working, the lineup works. But that happened like 7 games last year. So let's just try something new. Let's see Didi at the top of the order in the number two hole. I think that would be perfect.
I actually agree with you. I think that Didi is the perfect number two hitter. I think with the evolution of his offensive game, the way that he has really transformed himself, like you just mentioned, he can hit left-handed pitching now. 2 years ago, Didi Gregorius could not touch left-handed pitching. And the adjustments that were made in 1 year are phenomenal. And what
hit 320 against lefties.
He was one of the leaders in the American League against left-handed pitchers as a left-handed batter. So what I'm seeing is extreme progression. And I think that Didi is not even at his peak yet. I think Didi will continue to improve. I think he's a late bloomer offensively. I think this guy is really, really hitting his stride at this point. And I think you're absolutely right in the sense that I tweeted this from Bronx Pinstripes when we were watching this game, that if he is hitting in front of Gary Sanchez, the amount of fastballs that Didi Gregorius is going to get, he might hit 30 home runs.
Yeah, it's not out of the realm of possibility. Yeah. He hit 20 last year. I think that's a stretch, but I certainly think he can be another 20 homer hitter, maybe 25 out of your shortstop batting second.
No doubt.
I don't think. Derek Jeter's career high, I think, was 24. I'm not comparing Didi to Derek Jeter. All I'm saying is he could get a lot of good pitches to hit in that number two.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
I don't really give a shit if it's Gardner or Ellsbury batting first. I guess I'd prefer Gardner because I just like him better, and I actually think he's a little bit better of an on-base percentage guy. What if it's Ellsbury? Fine, so be it. If he's going to throw a conniption fit because he's not batting at the top of the order, he's making $153 million, fine, bat him first. But don't bat Gardner second in that case. Bat him ninth.
Yeah, we've been down this road. It's just, it doesn't work. When they're completely on, it's exciting and fun to watch. But it just doesn't happen very often because they don't stay on. One of them's hurt. One of them's in a massive slump. And they don't work very well back to back. So I totally agree. Split them up. The fact that Didi can hit left-handed pitching, you're not going to worry about, who's if there's a left-hander up, you're not going to really stress that too much because Didi can hit that. So, the beautiful thing is that because Sanchez now is such a weapon and came out and was such a prolific home run hitter in that second half of last year, you're going to see the guy in front of him get a lot of pitches and a lot of strikes. And with Didi, the way he's hitting, the way that he's added this power element, the way that he puts the bat on the ball quite a bit, and he is clutch. If you remember how many big hits he had last year at the end of games, that's the guy I want. I want more at-bats for Didi Gregorius.
And he's not, I mean, he's a better hitter, Didi I'm talking about, is a better hitter than a 7, 8, or 9 hitter. But he's not really a 5 or a 6 hitter.
Right.
So number 2 makes the perfect sense. And like you said, if Gardner and Ellsbury are going to be on fire during the same game once a month, like every time there's a full moon, it's not worth it.
I agree. And plus, we've just, let's just mix it up. Just for mixing it up sake. For God,
let's try something
let's
new.
Let's not see that again.
Try
please.
Something new.
We don't want to see it.
Was maybe a month in the 2015 season? Was it like
early? It was early. Yeah, it was very early. They were hot. They were both very hot. And it was what was it called? Chaos or creating havoc. That's what it was. Havoc on the base path. And
then Ellsbury pulled an oblique muscle or something in Washington.
Right. And Gardner got hurt and didn't tell anybody and played the rest of the season hurt. Not that I fault him for that, but that's what he does.
Yeah, but he's a warrior.
He's a warrior. He just doesn't tell anybody. He's hurt. It hurts the team.
Other spring training notes as I was watching and listening this weekend. Like I already said at the beginning, it was really fun to see Torres and Frazier play. Frazier had a couple of good games. Torres, I cannot wait for Gleyber Torres to be up here. He had a great game on Saturday. Scored 2 doubles, 2 runs, scored from second on a wild pitch. So I know this is cheesy and cliche, but the instincts and the intangibles are clearly there with Gleyber Torres. Everybody says it. The guy, Scott Kornberg, who you talked to from the Pelicans, who was the radio voice for Torres' team last year, said it. Scouts say it. All of the prospect analysts say it. Coaches say it. I just really think he's a can't-miss prospect.
He feels like that. I mean, I'm a big eyeball test guy. I don't really look at all of the 15 million acronyms on FanGraphs and all that to make a judgment on a player.
Well, that's what I'm here for. That's why we make a good combination.
A lot of it, for me, is the old school eyeball test. And when you're looking at this guy, the way that he practices, the way he conducts himself, the way that he plays in a game, the fact that he scored from second base, because that is baseball IQ, thank you very much. That is some talent right there. That's just knowing and feeling the game the right way. You're right. He does feel like a can't-miss prospect. This guy feels like he really gets it. And it's so exciting to watch that type of guy in the Yankee uniform. So, we were saying this and you kind of came at me and said that it was not a possibility. And maybe it's not, but he's not going to be in Double A for very long. He's going to have a cup of coffee in Double A and be gone because they're going to put him through.
I think I said that, he's not going to skip Double A, but I really think that we could see him by September as a September call-up this year.
He's not going to be down in the minor leagues for very long.
You
get a bad month from Chase Headley, and Chase Headley is gone.
Well, we will get a bad... No, you couldn't have had a worse 2 months from Chase Headley last year, and he wasn't gone.
Well, there was no guy there for the substitution.
So you're saying they're going to call up Torres and shift him to third base, a position he's never played?
No, I think they are going to be getting reps. They've already talked about it, that the Torres is going to start moving around positions. We're seeing right now what the Chicago Cubs have laid a template down, and I'm pretty damn sure that the New York Yankees have paid attention and that Joe Girardi is looking at what is happening over in Chicago. Because you're looking at all these guys. You saw Tyler Wade in center field. You see Mateo trying to get some work in center field. Torres has been at short. He's been getting work at second base. He's been getting work at third base. These guys are moving around because they really understand how important it is to have a flexible roster so that these guys can move and you can insert every day your best player. Look at Chicago right now. What's his face? Baez doesn't even have a position. He's not even in the starting lineup. And that guy was, you know, probably one of the best players on their team in the postseason. It's unbelievable, but they have so much flexibility that he's still going to get, you know, 400 at bats, almost 500 at bats, and not be a starter. But that's because of their flexibility, and it's a credit to the way that they develop their players. And I really do believe that the Yankees are taking note of that.
Don't forget about all the farm animals that Joe Maddon brings into the clubhouse.
Yeah, I don't know about the farm animals. I don't know how that helps matters, but it loosens it up, I guess.
Doesn't hurt matters.
Apparently it doesn't. No goats, though. Did they bring goats in?
No, that would have been, they didn't want to curse.
I know,
themselves.
I'm wondering.
Now, next
did
year,
Madden just say whatever and just bring a goat in?
Wasn't there a story of Theo Epstein eating goat after they won the World Series?
I don't know. I don't remember that.
I bet a lot of goats were sacrificed after the World Series. Anyway, I was trying to think of some nicknames for Gleyber Torres. I was kind of just tweeting about him on Saturday, and it just came out, G-Man. I don't know if that's any good.
Yeah, I saw you did it. And it feels a little lazy, to tell you the truth. If I'm going to be honest.
Gleyber is such an interesting first name. Also, Sterling had a hard time with his name.
Sterling has a hard time with a lot of things.
He called him Gleyber Torres.
That's okay. Maybe that's his name. Maybe he was using...
pronounced every syllable and then some. And
maybe that was his Venezuelan accent.
Yeah. And I had a total Albert and Costello moment with my dad on Saturday. Because after Torres hit the double, his first double, I said, oh, Gleyber Torres is the Yankees' number one prospect, and he's the number four prospect in baseball. And my dad was like, really? Torres, the little guy? I said, well, I mean, he's not that little. Maybe he's 5'11", listed at 5'11", maybe he's 5'10". He's like, there's no way he's 5'11", 5'10". My dad goes, he's like 5'5", maybe. And I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, the little guy from last year. I'm like, you're thinking of Ronald Torres. So I think, thank God I was there to correct my dad, or else he would have thought Ronald Torres and his mole were the Yankees' number one prospect.
Yeah, see, we just need to call him, well, they call him Toe, right? Which is, I kind of like that. Or, you know, the mole, which has double meaning. I kind of like that too.
That would have been scary, though, if Torres and not Torres is the Yankees' number one prospect.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Altuve, he's like an Altuve build, right? And Altuve is pretty decent.
Well, Altuve's got some thickness to him. Torres is a little shrimpy guy. But hey, I still liked him better than Headley last year. He put the bat on the ball.
I was going to say, you better watch out who you're making fun of, because that may be his replacement.
Another guy who's just working on getting the bat on the ball and the baseball will travel 1,000 feet is Aaron Judge. How about that bomb he hit on Friday that hit the top of the Steinbrenner Field left field scoreboard?
Yeah, that was fun to watch. That thing was a freaking rocket. It's so ridiculous when he makes contact. And that was when they had the when they do the between innings and Girardi gets on and starts talking to Michael Kay and whoever's doing the broadcast. That was his thing. His advice to Aaron Judge was just get the barrel on the ball. Oh, yeah. Thanks.
It's so simple, but a lot of times it's stupid. But for Aaron Judge, 6'7",
275
pounds, whatever he is, he's a mountain of a man. Yes, just get the barrel about on the ball, and he's going to hit 35 home runs. That's how huge he is.
So there was a lot of talk about this leg kick in the offseason, how he's trying to shorten his stride up and just really, you know, I guess be more compact so that he can hit that curveball. That was his big problem. He struck out on a curveball down. It was a slider down is what it was. It's not curveballs or sliders. It's breaking pitches. Breaking pitches low and away, breaking pitches down. Those are the ones he's got to lay off of. He's got to be able to recognize that pitch out of the hand, because if he doesn't, he's screwed. And what you're seeing now is the slightly modified leg kick. It looks almost like a step that he's doing now at this point. But from what he's saying, he's focused on his right hip, because apparently that's controlling his entire swing and his entire body. So
I'd imagine somebody his size, it's difficult to keep all of that intact and keep the mechanics working, right? I mean, the larger you are, the more time there is for things to go
and
wrong.
And repeating it, that's the key, right? You want to repeat the good motions, and repeating something when you're that big is a lot more difficult than if you were Torreyes, where it's a lot easier and you're a lot more compact and you can get to those, get your hands to a position a lot easier than Judge can. So, and that's another plus about having Holiday around. Holiday's a guy who's a big dude. I mean, he's not as big as Judge.
Looks small compared to Aaron
but he's
Judge.
He's a thick dude. He's what, 6'5", 6'4", 6'5"? So he's, you know, that's a good guy to be in the corner to at least just have conversations with about how you control your body and how you get through your body with being that big. So I think he's going to have
The problem for Judge, though, is there's really no comparisons because it's so uncommon for a 6'7", 6'8" baseball player. It just doesn't happen.
I mean, Giancarlo Stanton is like they look identical.
Yeah, I mean, he's not that big, though. I mean, he's not that
big. He's pretty damn close to that big. He's not that far off. They're both. I mean, you're being very. You're talking about like an inch or two at this point, maybe 10, 15 pounds. It's not that far off. They're very similar players.
Judge does not look like he belongs on a baseball field. It's weird. He's almost weird to look at on the baseball field. He's so tall and so wide, and he's wearing number 99,
which I love.
And he's got this big shit-eating grin on his face. He just doesn't belong on a baseball field.
He's got the Michael Strahan gap.
And then he hits a 500-foot home run. And I just can imagine him, if he can just stick on this team and not strike out all the time, he's going to be mine and so many people's favorite
player.
He's
going to be a massive superstar, no pun intended. I mean, you saw MLB tweeted out his home run. I'm telling you, he's like he's probably the most marketable player on this team long term, no doubt. So they all want him to succeed so badly.
I have no notions of him not striking out a lot. He's going to strike out a lot. He just can't strike out in half of his at-bats, which is what he did last year.
Well, and you have to assume that he's going to improve on that.
At what's the number, though? Do you think there's a certain number that the Yankees have in mind where if he can't get his strikeouts down to, say, X percent, 25% or maybe 30%, then they just can't put up with him in the lineup? I mean, he's going to kill so many rallies if he's striking out 35, 40% of the time. Because plenty of time there's rallies that you don't even need to get a hit. You just need to put the bat on the ball. And all he's going to see is sliders in the dirt. You're a moron if you're a pitcher that throws him a fastball until he proves he can lay off the slider in the dirt. So he's going to see that a bunch. Not like he's going to be hitting fourth for the Yankees because they've got other players to do that. He's going to be hitting eighth or ninth, at least to start this year. So what's the number? Do you think the Yankees have a number in mind?
I don't think they have a number. I think they're looking for progression, and I think that's what they want to see. They want to see progression. They want to see him making progress on the negatives of his game. And I mean, that's again, we've talked about this, how Judge, every single time he's been promoted to the next level, there's always that adjustment period. He's always struggled, and then he's come back and fixed it. So that's the name of the game. He's got to fix it. He's got to see progression, and I think that's what the Yankees are going to look for. Because who the hell is going to be playing right field otherwise? Aaron Hicks? No, thank you.
God.
No, thank you.
Boring.
No, thank you.
So boring. I mean, Judge is a good right fielder, too. He takes those long strides.
Freaking
get into the gap.
Yeah.
Cannon for an arm. Do you think he'll reach the third deck in Yankee Stadium?
Yes. Yes, I do. I think he's going to hit the
ball. No one's gone upper tank in left field in the new Yankee Stadium. It's happened. Raul Banez, and then who was that guy from Seattle? Was it Russell Branyan? No, am I thinking someone from Seattle hit it into the third level in right field at the new Yankee Stadium. No one's ever gone third deck left field at the new Yankee Stadium. But if there's going to be someone, it's going to be Joe.
Bro, he's going to hit it out of the stadium. I'm telling you,
he's gonna pull a Mickey Mantle.
He's going Mickey Mantle.
Wasn't there. It's gonna,
he's going yeah, Mickey okay. Mantle. The ball is gonna leave the stadium. He's freaking huge.
I just think that maybe, who knows, maybe Judge will be an all-star this year, but I think MLB needs to make an exception and just put him in the home run derby.
Well, they don't need to be all-stars, right? Don't they? I mean, a lot of these guys aren't all-stars in the home run derby. They could just do it.
Yeah, but you need to have you need to have a lot of home runs.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I think it's a how are they picking them? Because at one point there was like a captain and they were picking them. Are they still doing that? Because there was a certain
like
way.
MLB.
It's another gimmicky thing that they were doing, but they were definitely someone. They had a captain and they were picking the guys. So, you know,
I feel like they changed the rules on the home run derby.
Yeah, he very well could be in it, but hopefully he doesn't pull a Bobby Abreu and then hit a bunch of home runs and then never sniff a home run for the rest of the year.
That was a little suspicious.
Yeah,
huh?
A little suspicious.
Abreu wasn't with, he was still with the Phillies.
He was,
when he, did that
he was.
Though, right?
But that's like saying, I mean, Ichiro, if you put Ichiro in the home run derby, a lot of people said that he would win it because the dude hits bombs in batting practice. So, but and apparently,
and
so does Tebow apparently, because that was all over ESPN today.
Yeah, is there any player that has no shot at making baseball that gets so many baseball headlines more than Tim Tebow?
He literally was in the highlights and in on like the front pages, and I think I even got a notification from somewhere about the fact that he had 9 batting practice home runs. Like, come on. If you're a Mets fan, you got to be so angry about this, right? I mean, if I'm a Mets fan, Tebow.
You're
want
not
nothing
angry
to
at this
because
you knew this was going to happen the moment you signed him.
I know, but if I'm a Mets fan, I'm not happy that they signed him in the first place. And the fact that he's taking any headlines right now is just probably the most annoying thing.
Tim Tebow and Aaron Judge are listed at roughly the same weight.
Yeah, Tebow's thick.
Yeah. His thighs are like 3 times the size of my thighs. It's insane. Anyway. Other spring training notes. Ref Snyder was playing all over the diamond except second base. So it's kind of typical stuff for Ref Snyder at this point. And then also, this is a note you put in there. Holiday, Carter, and Judge are all massive. And if there will be a bench-clearing brawl, the Yankees are in good shape this year.
I made that note because there have been a few, you know, little tiffs with the Blue Jays recently. And I could see potentially something happening. And we're good. Like, I dare you to come at us. We got some scrappy dudes. We got some massive dudes. We're in good shape. CC just doesn't get, he'll go up to anybody.
Who goes out first? Who leads
CC.
The parade?
CC does. Because CC doesn't give a rat's ass. CC just goes out there looking for something. Remember that picture I posted of him like in like the mayhem where he's smiling? Like,
smiling.
Let's go.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's go.
Loves
yeah.
it. But see, even though Judge is huge, he seems like a gentle giant.
Yeah, but he's going to get his boys
like
back.
Frazier,
he's going to get his boys back.
Like Clint, of course he will, but Clint Frazier, I think, is a maniac and that once he's in the heat of battle, if you drill him or his teammate, I mean, he might just black out and not stop until someone pulls him aside and puts him into the dugout.
No doubt.
Whereas Judge, I think, has a more sane head on his shoulders. And Judge probably needed to be conscious of his size his whole life, right? Or else he'd just break people.
He would get in trouble. I couldn't even imagine him playing football in high school. But you're right.
Do you hold on before you move on? Did you ever watch The King of Queens?
No.
Kevin James was practicing football with, it was a Pee Wee football league, and he was just truck sticking like these 8-year-olds. And I would imagine that's how Judge was in high school.
Yeah, that's one of my dreams. Actually, one of my dreams is to go back into Little League right now and pitch.
Yeah, the Little League World
it would be
Series.
Fun.
Yeah, but then you'd still get taken deep.
I don't know. We'll see. I think I would dominate.
But we're good for a bench clearing brawl. So, Blue Jays is a good call. The Orioles are always down to do something annoying.
Yeah, Josh Donaldson's a little bitch. I mean, he cries about getting thrown inside. I mean, not even that far inside. He's obviously, ready to complain. And then he doesn't even do it at that point. He complains in the dugout to his boys and then lets his boys do the dirty work. He's a little bitch. He's becoming one of my on the list with like Brett Lowry. He's
kind of got that look.
Yeah,
he's got that scumbag.
Yeah, he's becoming on that list. And I have a feeling now with the Yankees, with a young, scrappy bunch, I have a feeling this list is going to grow. I have a feeling that we're going to get a lot more emotional about these games coming up in the next this year and moving forward. Because I don't know, for some reason, like you mentioned Frazier, like when Frazier comes up and some of these other guys, I just have a feeling we're going to have some real rivalry.
Well, you know what the annoying thing is? That I feel the chances of a brawl between the Yankees and Red Sox this coming year are like the lowest they've been in years. Those teams seem to be the best of friends, or maybe even not the best of friends, just totally apathetic towards each other.
I don't think they know each other, though. I think all the guys that know each other are gone.
Where's that rivalry? It's
but that's the thing.
Dormant.
But that's the beauty of it. That's where I think you're missing the point here. The way that these rivalries come about is guys that don't know each other, they get pissed off in the middle of the game. Like, that has to be a spur of the moment. I hate you because you did this. I hate you because you are this. And that comes on the baseball field. So I do believe that there's actually the potential for something very big and heated there, because it doesn't seem like they're friends. It doesn't seem like they're friends. And Mookie Betts seems like a guy who will kind of be a dick when if the rivalry's going.
Really?
Yeah, I could see him being like that. Have you heard him? He's a little cocky dude, man.
UC Jeter named him as his favorite baseball player. And I think that was just like the only player that Jeter could think of, because I don't think he watches baseball. Yeah. I think Mookie Betts was like the only non-Yankee Derek Jeter could think of.
Yeah, Mookie Betts. I mean, he's a good ball player. There's no doubt about it. But maybe the captain was trolling a little bit, trolling the Yankees players to step their game up. Like, I'm picking a Red Sox. Let's go. Maybe that's why he didn't have as many of the big lists as a lot of the prospects at his dinner. Maybe they all went to A-Rod's because of that comment.
Yeah. How, what did you think of that when you saw that Jeter took all the prospects out for a dinner and then 2 days later, A-Rod was taking him out to an even bigger dinner?
So did he?
Classic.
Yeah,
A-Rod.
He went to Ruth's Chris, I think I saw. Or one of them did. I think it was A-Rod that went there. I don't know where Jeter went. Jeter probably had some like badass steakhouse that's like a local one. It was probably way classier. But there was a lot of guys that I didn't even really recognize at that dinner, whereas A-Rod had all the, you know, the A-list prospects going to it. So.
Yeah, Jeter takes you to a fine like Italian dining restaurant, exactly. And then A-Rod takes you to Ruth's Chris, and then you go to a strip club afterwards.
Yes, yes. With cousin,
which dinner would you rather
cousin
be
Yuri?
In? Which dinner? Which dinner would you rather go?
I mean, there's no doubt about it. I want to go to dinner with Derek Jeter.
Right, but then I want to go to the A-Rod dinner after. Party.
Maybe I will crash the strip club. 100% chance we'll crash the strip club. How about that?
Well, Jeter's an expecting father now, so he has to take it easy.
Yeah, I mean, he would be in a back room where nobody would know he was there anyway. He's smart. Or A-Rod would just go through the front door and be like, hey, I'm here.
He got
I'm
away
here.
With some shit in the 90s and 2000s in Manhattan, so he knows what he's doing.
A-Rod would rip his shirt off and start making it rain while Twitter and Facebook are just all cameras are on him.
Yankees camp and Yankees Twitter lit up as soon as A-Rod came in to Yankee spring training. He was on the field, smiling his ass off. He was working with the young players, really getting into the mentoring thing. Did officially use the word retired. Yeah. What did you think of that? Yankees still have to pay him, though. Just a little side note.
Well, I guess at this point,
get that $22 million check.
I guess he had to wait till the season was like ready to go, because there was probably some date where that contract for that day or for this year goes into play without the retirement clause. Because that was the first time that we've heard him say that. Everybody else has said it, but he hasn't said it until now.
He's actually avoided it.
And I have a feeling it has to do with the contract and just making sure that these things pan out the way that him and Hal had their agreement. They had an agreement behind closed doors, and you know, I thought all along that he was done, and that A-Rod, more than anything, just wants to be a Yankee for the rest of his career and would not screw that up by going to play with the Marlins or whomever for a year. Like, this is way more important and probably way more lucrative for him if he stays a Yankee for the rest of his career, because who knows, down the road, I've heard people talking and chirping about, you know, potential some kind of ownership thing going on with A-Rod and getting involved with the organization, and, you know, who knows. That's something that we'll definitely have to keep an eye on. But I have a feeling A-Rod wants to be a Yankee for forever, and like, that's his legacy.
He wants to be a Yankee forever, but he does not want to be a manager, which makes total sense, because when have you ever heard of a player of A-Rod's success and caliber become a manager? I mean, that would be unheard of. No one has ever been that good at baseball and then become a manager.
Pete Rose.
I think it's more.
Gotcha.
Yeah, but Pete Rose wanted to gamble. That's why he became a manager.
Yeah, but there are guys who have done it. I mean, not to the extent, but Alan Trammell went to bed. There are good players who came back and have managed.
Yeah, but everything
Mattingly,
that's been with A-Rod. Mattingly is actually a really good example. Mattingly was a great player, MVP.
Yogi Berra.
He didn't make the money. Okay. He didn't make the money that A-Rod. Those guys didn't make the money. I'm talking like A-Rod's a half a billionaire.
Yeah, okay, that's a different story if we're talking about that.
He doesn't need to stress. Like, look at Joe Girardi. I mean, the dude looks 50 years older since 2008.
I don't think these guys are necessarily all doing it about the money. They're not doing it because they need the money. Mattingly's not managing because he needs the money. He's managing because...
I think Mattingly probably needs some money. No. I mean, I don't know what Mattingly's making, but I bet he's making $2.5 million a year.
It's not that he needs the money.
He never made that as
obviously
a player.
Obviously, the money's nice. No doubt about it. But he's doing it because he wants to be a manager and he loves the game. I believe that. I believe if you don't love the game and you don't love what you're doing, and you're doing it for the money, you're not going to be good. You're not going to stick. There's no possible way you could do it because it's such a long job.
Sure,
you got to have it
just for the money. There's more to it than just the money. Than the money. I mean, but
I could see A-Rod coming back from that, and at some point, once he gets a little older, once his girls get a little older, they're often, you know, doing their own thing. They're married off, and A-Rod's sitting there twiddling his thumbs with A-Rod Corp, sick of signing balls. He could go back and possibly manage. Or I could see him in this role, which I think is more realistic, in a John Elway role, where he just goes and is baseball operations. Yeah.
And I actually think he could be good at that.
Possibly. Yeah, he does have a. I just don't like A-Rod.
Mattingly made $29.9 million over his career, so he doesn't need the money.
Yeah, there you go. if you invest well with any we're close to that, you're good.
All right. Final bit of stuff before we get into the mailbags. It's the story that never ends. The Yankees are reportedly still dug into Jose Quintana's sweepstakes. Somebody, a reporter for CBS Chicago. His name was something Levine. I don't remember his first name, and I just wrote
it. Is that Levine or Levine?
I don't know. I was kind of pronouncing it different last week on purpose, just a slight dig at Levine for calling Betances Dylan and not Dylan. But, I mean, I don't know. Is it Levine or Levine?
I think it's tomato, tomato. Who knows?
Anyway, Yankees remain invested in Jose Quintana sweepstakes. Fine. Like, what else is new? I understand that because Jose Quintana is available and the Yankees have shown interest before, Cashman is probably continuing to monitor what's going on with him. If I'm the White Sox, though, I'm not trading him now. Trade him at the deadline when there's going to be five teams who are looking for a starting pitcher, all outbidding one another. Jose Quintana has been durable. 200 innings every year since 2013. He's got a low 3 ERA every year. I'm not worried about Quintana having a bad first half or breaking down. He's 28 years old. I'm pretty confident if I'm the White Sox, I can get a haul of prospects for him at the July deadline instead of right now or in a week or 2 weeks ago or whatever it may be.
Yeah, I think this is a story that has come up because you got to keep it alive. I think it's because it came from Chicago. It seems like it's a very hot topic up there because he's the last guy that they're. I guess Frazier is also a potential.
No, Frazier, Melky, Robertson.
Yeah, there are some guys, I guess, but he's definitely the one that would get the biggest haul because of the contract and his age and all that. So you know, great. Okay, we're involved with it. That's Brian Cashman's job. He's gonna see what's up. You know, if the asking price is still what we think it is and what was reported from over the winter, then you know, no, thank you. So that's where I stand on that. And you're right; they're gonna get a haul if they hold on to him. And he does pitch well in the first half at the trade deadline.
I also think that so there were other teams mentioned, the Astros, the Pirates, the Cardinals, and that was it. Astros, Pirates, Cardinals, and then the Yankees were mentioned to be involved in Quintana. I would say that both the Cardinals and the Astros are more likely to trade for him. The Astros, because they need starting pitching and they're going to be in competition this year. I mean, they've got a really good offense, and Keuchel had a bad year last year, so who knows how he's going to be. And also the Cardinals just lost what's his name, Reyes, to an injury.
The pitch, yeah,
yeah. Well, I'm blanking on his name. I just read it today, and I can't. Alex Reyes or Alexis Reyes, whatever.
Reyes, yeah. That's a team. Well, first of all, the Cardinals have some work to do to get into that. All three of these teams, if you're talking about four teams, Yankees being one, and then three teams you mentioned, the Astros are the ones that really stand out to me because. One, I don't think the Pirates are going to be remotely close, so that would be a long-term move if they think they can do it. But I don't know. What are you going to do with the Cubs for the next couple of years? Nothing. And then the Cardinals are kind of in that same boat. They've been good for so long.
But there's a wild card now.
Yeah,
so
there
you
is.
You can't punt on a season.
No, I understand that, but you're also not going to give up the haul that they're looking for the one guy when you need to, you know, kind of overhaul your team with the Pirates. I mean, they're at a point now where they're almost going to blow it up and restart. But...
Yeah, they missed their window.
Yeah, exactly. The Astros are the ones that McCullers is their, what, number two or three guy, and he's already...
McHugh,
thank you. He's the one who, right now, is going through dead arm in spring training. That's not good. So the fact that their number two guy is already experiencing a dead arm and saying that he's going to be fine for when the season... Okay, yeah, good luck with that. But they got a pitch. I mean, their offense is going to be ridiculous. They got a pitch, so that one really stands out to me.
Yeah. All right, one bit of thing before we get into mailbags, please rate and review the podcast in iTunes. I say it every week, but it's working. They tick up week by week. We're at 200 finally. Everyone who's listening right now, if you like the podcast, go give it a rating. There's a lot more than 200 people listening, so I know there's people out there who have not rated it yet. I understand some people aren't listening on iTunes. So go on Stitcher Radio, Google Play. If you're in the UK, apparently there's a different rating system. Go do it. Just give us a 5-star review. And if you're not feeling so generous, give us a 4-star review. But please give us a 5-star review. All right, Scott, are you ready to get into mailbags?
Yes.
This first one comes from Matt, and he says, how doomed is the starting rotation? Is every Yankee home game going to go over the over-under total? I'm assuming he's talking about the Vegas over-under totals. Anyway, some people, I think the rotation is doomed when you have the only sure things, I'm using quotes, as Tanaka, Pineda, and CeCe. And I wouldn't even call Pineda or CeCe sure things. And you know my feelings about Tanaka. Anyway, Severino, Warren, Mitchell, Sessa, Green, and maybe Caprellian, depending on who you read or talk to, are competing for those last two spots. So what do you think, Scott? Is it doomed?
No, I don't think it's doomed at all. I'm very, very much the optimist in this duo of Yankees podcasting, and the fact that all these young guys are fighting and just chomping at the bit for this 4 or 5 spot, I think is such a good thing long term for the Yankees, and then directly affecting the Yankees this year. I think Severino, I have confidence that Severino is going to come back. We've already seen early in the spring. First of all, everybody's pitched well early in the spring so far. I get it. It's one start. They've pitched 2 innings. That's fine. But this is overreacting day, right? So I'm going to overreact. They looked good. I liked Severino. The fact that he has really made a concerted effort to establish that third pitch, that changeup. He was throwing it when he was pitching, when he pitched 2 scoreless innings, and it looked good. It had a little bit of a fade away too, which I like. It had movement. It wasn't just a straight change that was just coming in like a fastball. It actually moved as well, which I think is even more of a filthy pitch if he can command that. So if that's something that if he gets that changeup, he will be an effective starter. There's no doubt about it. That's a lock. If he has that changeup, he will be an effective starter, and he will jump to probably the top 2 or 3 in this rotation. So that's a guy that's fighting for the 4 spot.
Severino is the interesting one out of the bunch because he's the only one who I can see being a frontline starter. Right. That's not a knock on Adam Warren or Brian Mitchell or Luis Sessa or Chad Green. But Severino has the potential to be a difference maker. Wouldn't you agree?
I would agree to an extent that, but I do see one more guy in here that I think could really take another step up that could really surprise some people, and that's Brian Mitchell.
Okay, but I want to focus on Severino for a second, and I wrote something on Friday. It was the importance of Luis Severino to not only the Yankees 2017 team, but 2017 and beyond. Because if Severino falls flat on his face, that totally changes what Brian Cashman has to do to this rotation next year. But if he has a good season and looks like he's going to be a number one or a number two starter, then you don't have to pay Tanaka a boatload of money to keep him. You probably still will, but you don't have to. Then you don't have to overpay Michael Pineda to keep him just because you need some stability. Then who knows what CeCe does if he comes back for a year or not. But this rotation is going to have a lot of turnover. You need somebody who's controllable, young, and stable. And right now, that guy seems to be Severino. I understand there's other guys that could step up, but right now, Severino is the leader in the clubhouse for who I think could fill that role.
And there's no doubt. I mean, we've been talking about Severino for a couple of years now as the next guy coming up. I mean, he was the touted number one pitching prospect in the Yankees organization. He's the guy.
And he looked like it in 2015.
And he looked like it at the end of last year in the bullpen. I mean, the guy was dominant.
The bullpen, though, that's not good enough.
What we saw was stuff. We saw the guy that is effective. He could pitch.
It was bizarre because he was so good. He was filthy out of the bullpen. I was running the numbers in that blog I wrote, and he allowed a 105 batting average against as a relief pitcher, and a 330 batting average against as a starting pitcher. And you'd say, okay, well, maybe he's getting shelled in the 4th or 5th inning. Nope, getting shelled in the 1st inning. So it makes no sense. Why can he pitch the 7th inning fine, but he can't pitch the 1st inning fine?
He needs a sports psychologist. That's what he needs. A psychiatrist. He needs a guy who could teach him and train him how to get right between the ears, because that's the only thing that makes sense. It's the same physical tools. The guy has the tools to do it. Granted, when you're in the bullpen, you don't need that third pitch as much, but he was pitching a few innings in the bullpen. He wasn't just pitching one inning where you could get away with those 2 pitches. The guy was...
By that logic, though, your first time through the rotation, through the batting order as a starter, should still be
right.
good.
But that's my point. My point is that that's not the only logic. That's not the reason. The reason is between the ears. The guy mentally was not there for whatever reason. He was you know, become, had a lapse in mental toughness, mental awareness, like just focus. I don't know what it
maybe
was.
Maybe he was conserving energy. Maybe he was like, oh, I need to get through six or seven innings, so I'm not going to.
That could be in the back of the
which
mind.
Which is fine, but still, 105 to 330 is, that mean, that's not even the same human. That's not even the same pitcher.
The beauty of the fact that he has that changeup, if he has that changeup, he's going to have a lot more comfort and confidence that he could get through the rotation. I'm sorry, get through the lineup with relative more ease, get through these guys. Cause he's got another pitcher that he can hold on to and wait. He doesn't have to show them the first time around. He could show them the second
slider
time around.
And the slider and the changeup will make a world.
Absolutely. So you're right. This guy, I think it's all between the ears. So this is, we've seen the physical tools. We know he has them. Now go do it.
So you were starting to talk about Brian Mitchell as a potential sleeper to maybe be a difference maker in the rotation. And he looked like he was going to be a difference maker on the team last year. And he broke his foot or what?
It was a toe.
What did he have? Turf toe.
Yeah, turf toe. Which sounds horrible. And I used to make fun of it, but it's excruciating. It's like the worst thing ever. It sounds
A 4-month injury, it better be excruciating.
Yeah, and especially for a pitcher where you got to use your feet quite a bit. You know, the reason I say Brian Mitchell is because last year, he was very, very, very good in spring training. He looked like a guy, he was throwing, mid to high 90s. I made a point last year that was probably the first time we saw Mitchell in an extended time, right? That we had seen him over a number of starts of spring training last year. And I didn't realize how hard he actually threw, how he was throwing in the high 90s. This guy has a lot of movement on his pitches. The ball seems like it, you know how they say it comes out of your hand easy. It's like an easy fastball. That's what it looks like. It looks like it just pops out of his hand. And also now, he was talking about between innings, he was talking, I think, with Meredith Marakovic, that he is developing a splitter. The fact that he's adding another pitch to his repertoire is so promising to me. No, it really is, because this is...
Pump the brakes, though. Let's see if he can throw two or three pitches before he adds a
fourth. No, he has three pitches. That's the beauty. He's adding a fourth pitch.
He hasn't successfully thrown them. I know he's had times in the major leagues where he's looked good, but
this is a guy.
Let's see how he does for an extended period of time if he does indeed get one of these.
Look, you stop raining on my overreacting parade and let me overreact, for God's sakes.
I'm sorry. Come on. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Overreact. Cy Young for Brian.
Yes,
Mitchell,
absolutely.
Right? Second runner up Cy Young will be Luis Severino.
Fine. Matt Holliday's going to win the MVP. That's all good. But here's the deal. Uh-huh. Brian Mitchell was about to take another step last year and got screwed by that injury. It was bad luck. Now is his time. He is going to win that fifth spot. If I were going to put money on any of these, it's going to be Severino and Mitchell. That's who I would put. I'm saying like 80%. I think that's who it's going to be. I think Chad Green is going to start in the bullpen. I think Sessa is going to be a long guy. I think these two guys are the ones that are the ones that are going to win. And Mitchell, with developing yet another pitch, has the potential to be very, very good. And if he is very good, totally different rotation.
You don't think Warren has a shot to be the number five starter? Girardi might want a little bit more stability in the rotation? Or is he cursed by the fact that Girardi knows he can use him out of the bullpen?
I think that we know what Warren is, and I agree.
He was good as a starter in 2015.
He was good as a starter, but like you just said, Girardi has a guy where he can play with. It's his little toy. He could go in. He could be a long guy.
That sounded weird.
he can do what he needs to do with him. Doesn't need to be locked in that fifth role. I think Warren's that guy who is going to be in the middle throwing at different places. We might even see him, or Girardi, try to use him in like an Andrew Miller role. I could see him trying to do that. While he's not even remotely close to that guy, he's going to be flexible in that sense.
This is interesting. I like it. Every week as we go through spring training, we should rank the rotation Royal Rumble for the fourth and fifth starters where we think it stands. So you're saying Severino and Mitchell have the early lead. Then what would you say? Warren, Sessa, and Green are all kind of second level right now. I know it's only been one start, but that's where you stand.
I think Green is going to be the most effective out of the bullpen. I think that kid, when he's throwing one or two innings, can throw like high 90s, has a hell of a fastball. I have a feeling that's where his future is. Sessa probably has I think he's a 4 or 5 starter, but I could absolutely see him.
That's his ceiling.
I mean, that's where he's going to, that's where he would end up no matter if he was on this team or another team. I think he's a 4 or 5 starter, but on this team, I don't think they're going to, he's going to get starts. All of these guys are going to get starts. Let's not be mistaken. That's a good point to bring up.
There will be injuries.
Yes. All of these guys will start at one point. Look what happened last year. There were a lot of people starting. Caprellian will probably get starts this year too.
The team will be really in really good shape if only two of these guys start for the whole year and they make 30 starts.
Yeah, that'd be a good sign, no doubt.
All right, so we'll see after one more, next week after we have another five starts from total from these guys of overreacting, we'll see where they stand. All right, what do we have next?
Next is from Wilder. He said, why are the Yankees keeping Headley? Use one of the kids instead. Use the first 12 weeks to test the kids out at third. Even Tyler Wade could play there.
Read the next one from Patrick, too, because it closely ties in.
All right, so Patrick says, big fan of the show. Here's my not-so-hot take. The Yankees will find a spot for Miguel Andujar on the 40-man roster should he continue to have the kind of spring training he's had so far. It's been a weekend. Even though...
I love it.
Even though
Patrick overreacting. He's on the
overreact. I said overreact. Let's go. Bring it on. Even though he hasn't played in AAA, he has shown that he could come back. He could play well against better competition so far. Worst case scenario, they could always use... they could always option him back down if he doesn't perform.
And continuing on the overreacting slash making headlines slash news that is really shouldn't be made a big deal of, but let's make a big deal out of it. Greg Bird took grounders at third base last week.
Chris Carter, full-time first baseman.
Headley obviously isn't going anywhere for the time being, but a lot of people want to see him gone. And Headley's time is numbered,
yeah,
though. When you look at the amount of young players on this team, young infielders, Torres, Mateo, Tyler Austin when he's healthy, Miguel Andujar, who am I missing?
Did you say Torres? Because Torres might slide over there. Yeah.
Torres.
What about Torres?
And then you have Castro and Didi who are not even played their 28-year-old seasons yet at the major league level. Yeah. I mean, Headley's days are ticking.
Yeah, no doubt. And Castro is one of those guys that we said could slide over to third base. I mean, that's a guy who could make a natural switch. You're absolutely right. And this is absolutely the last year, I think, for Chase Headley personally. I think they will eat the rest of the contract.
Thank God.
They'll trade him. They'll do something. I think this is the last year. Because they have so many infielders coming up, and you know, granted, if they have terrible seasons, if Torres is not the guy that we think he is, which is a long shot, I think it's actually a long shot for him to fail, in my opinion, and I think your opinion as well, because we said he's a can't miss. I guess that's the definition of that, right? But I you know, Castro, I still don't understand why everybody's trying to trade Castro. I don't get it. I really don't. I feel like this guy's
because everyone likes the new and hot item. They
so
see
ridiculous.
These prospects and they say, oh, we got to get rid of the old guy Castro at second. Meanwhile, he's 28 years old.
Yeah, it's so ridiculous. And he had 20 home runs last year. He had his most productive offensive season as far as power. Like, this is a guy that can move over to third base. Please. There's room for these guys.
But even if he doesn't, fine. If he doesn't, fine, and they want to move on from Castro, fine. But let's not boot him out of town.
He's controlled through 2019, I think. I mean, it's like, why would you do that? It doesn't make any sense. People don't want, you would get more for someone in the minor leagues probably than you were going to get for Castro at this point. Anyway,
let me ask you a question. Say the Yankees played Miguel Andujar at third base to start the season, which would be ridiculous because he's only played 72 games in AA and has not even played AAA. Right. How much worse would the team be than having Chase Headley there?
You know what? It's so funny because I keep going back to Solarte. I keep going back to Solarte.
Who's outproduced Headley.
And how he came up, was not a highly touted guy, but came up, played an admirable third base, got hot, got real cold, got hot, was serviceable, but was pretty much Chase Headley. So,
because Andujar is 22 going on 23 years old. So it's not like you're going to if you bring Torres up now, who just turned 20, you could ruin him. I don't think you would because I think he's a can't miss prospect, but you run that
risk. He's
an
old soul.
Also, you don't want to ruin Torres. You want to do everything right with
him. So we want to ruin Andujar?
No. Well, if you do, it's not the end of the world. But like, how much worse would they be?
Yeah, I agree.
Not much worse, if worse at all. Probably better in my eyes because I'd like it better.
If Chase Headley does what he did in the second half, then he's gonna be fine. He plays a good third base. You know, that the first year he was over there with the throwing injury, the throwing weird issues.
So you're saying if he produces like he did in the second half of the whole year, I would say that he'll probably end up with the same stats as last year. So maybe he doesn't suck in the beginning of the year and play slightly above average in the second half of the year. Maybe he's just regular medium suck for the whole
year. He's going to hit 260. He's going to hit 15 home runs. He's just driving 60 RBIs. That's what he's going to do. And he's
falling asleep.
And he's going to play a good third base. He's going to snag a bunch of balls going towards.
Unfortunately, Andujar made an error, a throwing error on Saturday. Yeah. It's like, can't be making errors.
No, you cannot be making errors. You cannot be making errors. But yeah, Andujar, look, they're going to wait. This is the year where Headley is going to basically be a stopgap for these guys to develop. That's what this is.
Maybe I won't hate Headley as much because I know it's temporary.
Yeah, they're going to eat the contract. It's going to happen. Be confident in that. That they will eat some of that contract. I guarantee it.
All right, let's move on to the next one. Is from Noah Adler on Twitter. He's at NoahAdler99. And he says, my question is, if Gary Sanchez is able to stay healthy this season, how many home runs will he hit? And we talked about expectations and if people are thinking Gary Sanchez is going to keep up that pace at the end of last year, which is totally unrealistic. If he could actually be disappointing this season, even if he has a good season. We talked about it a few weeks ago, but I think Noah is a new listener, and I'm sure we have some other new listeners, so let's get into it again. I looked up Fangraph's 2017 predictions for Gary Sanchez, and they have him playing 138 games, .274 batting average, .832 OPS, which is a really good OPS for a catcher, 27 home runs, which is the most projected homers this season for a full-time catcher, and a 5.4 WAR, which is also very good. That is essentially in line with Buster Posey's past five seasons. And I think you and I would agree that if Gary Sanchez turns into Buster Posey, we and the Yankees will be very happy.
Yeah, not to mention he's throwing out people on 100%.
Missiles.
He's just laying out everybody. It's ridiculous, his arm. I cannot believe how under the radar his defense was when he was in the minor leagues, how it wasn't talked about.
Remember he totally revamped
it. It's crazy. It's unbelievable.
He got sat down. He got basically a slap on the wrist. I think it was 2014 or 2015. It was 2015 because we were doing the podcast. He got a slap on the wrist, and since then he rededicated himself to defense. And
how do you hide? How do you hide a cannon like that? I don't understand.
Laziness?
I guess. But yeah, it's unbelievable. Those predictions I think are pretty accurate. I see him right around 30 home runs. That's kind of where I am. 274. I would be actually impressed if he hit 274 his first year. I could see that batting average taking a dip the first year because I think he's going to get one.
I said that a couple weeks ago, and you said no.
I did. I don't remember that. A little bit. I think he'll be around like 265, 270 in that area just because I think there's a book on him. I think they're going to be a lot more. I think there's going to get a lot tougher pitching, coming in. He's the guy that they have to avoid. So,
and he's got expectations.
There's expectations. There's a lot on his. While he doesn't seem like he is affected by it, he's still a young guy who gets at his own brain. It's just natural.
How crazy, though, is a 30 home run hitter who throws out runners with ease, who's batting in the 3 or 4 slot in the order, who's a young kid, young catcher, team leader, 5.5 win season. If he meets all those projections, some Yankees fans will be disappointed.
Yes, because of how torrid a start he had. It's
kind of cursed himself.
That's on the fan. That's a personal problem. That is a fan issue.
That's a me problem.
Yeah,
that's a you problem, not a me problem.
Look, everybody who has that mentality right now needs to look in the mirror and smack themselves in the face because it's not going to happen. The dude got hot. The dude did something that nobody ever has done in Major League Baseball.
Forever.
It was unprecedented. This is not going to happen.
There's been, 10,000 baseball players in history, and he was the only one to ever do what
yes.
he did.
So the fact that you think that he's going to continue what he did is just unrealistic. So don't think that. That's all I got to tell you. Lower your expectations. Get them in line, because if you don't, you're going to be disappointed.
It's a really good motto for life, actually.
I know.
Just lower your expectations, and then things will work out happy, because you'll most likely at least meet those low expectations or do better.
And if you do go under those expectations, if they're lower, then there's a serious issue.
Yeah, just kill yourself.
Just walk off a bridge. don't do that.
All right. What do we have next?
The next is from Judah. This is a little off the field. It says, what is your opinion on wearing gear for other teams? For example, I'm a big Yankees fan, but I own some Dodgers and Giants stuff that I like to wear. What you got? You're wearing no Red problem. Sox, sporting some Red Sox hats around Boston?
No, see, that's exactly what I was going to say. If you're a Yankees fan and you're wearing a Dodgers or a Giants hat, it's interesting. Maybe his dad or his grandpa was a New York baseball fan from back in the 50s. Maybe that's where he gets those New York baseball ties. I don't really have an issue with that because they're not a rival. If you're a Yankees fan wearing a Mets hat or a Yankees hat or basically anybody in the American League, then I have a problem.
Yeah, so here's the deal. I don't think you should be wearing anybody else's. The one exception I think is that, like you just said, there's like some family tie where, like, for instance, I'll give you a for instance in my life. I've talked about this. When I was a kid, I used to go down to Vero Beach all the time in Florida, and we would always do like Dodger Town. We would go to the Dodger stuff. So like they were always kind of like a National League team that I wouldn't necessarily follow them, but I would always look in the paper at their, see what they were doing and things like that. And I have right now in my office, I have a Vero Beach Dodgers pennant from like 20, 30 years ago. Like, I'm rocking that because I think it's kind of cool. It's something that's from my childhood. I probably have some Vero Beach Dodgers gear somewhere, but I don't really wear it all the time. The only exception if I would wear it is if I thought it was like a cool hat, like a cool design or something like that.
I think retro stuff is cool.
I may rock it just for, just, you know, not, but I wouldn't like wear it to a game or anything like that. It would, you know, maybe around the house or, I don't know, doing stuff in the yard. Like, I'm not wearing it in public.
It totally depends on how cool the jersey or the hat or whatever is.
You mean trendy? If it's trendy, you shouldn't do it.
I'm saying like unique.
Yeah.
If it's like a unique retro jersey, or if you have, I saw a, I was at a baseball game. I was at a Yankees, it was at Yankee Stadium. I forget who the Yankees were playing, but I saw someone wearing a Montreal Expos Vlad Guerrero jersey.
Okay.
And I was like, that's a cool jersey. I would wear that jersey.
See, I'm, as an adult, I would never wear that jersey right now. I'm not a jersey guy, but if I'm in like,
I'm not a jersey guy either, but I thought it was a cool jersey. It was unique because the team's not even in existence anymore, and Vlad was a badass player. Yeah.
Okay. I'll tell you where this really lies a lot is when you're in like middle school and high school. When you're in middle school and high school, you're rocking like gear from everybody, right? Like there's usually a lot of the kids, well, even if they have a favorite team and a favorite player, they're still going to wear occasionally some of the other stuff just because it's trendier, it's cool, or it's whatever, and you're just a baseball fan. And I kind of get that. Like you grow up in a certain point, but at a certain point in your life, you need to make a decision, and you can't be going around wearing like the it guy's jersey or the it guy's hat because he's the it guy and you're not a fan of that team. Like, to me, that's unacceptable.
Let me ask you this. This is an example from my life. I want to see what your take is. Remember the All-Star game in 1999 was at Fenway Park?
Yeah.
So I was 11 years old. And I was at summer camp, sleepaway summer camp in Massachusetts.
Is it band camp?
No, it was Jew camp. It's all Jewish camp. Anyway, we went to Fenway Park the week before the All-Star game, or maybe it was the week after, and it was right around it. And I got a All-Star game 1999 hat, and it had like a green monster kind of like logo on it. It did not say Red Sox on it anywhere. I believe it did say Fenway Park. And I wore that hat that summer as a Yankees fan. What do you think?
How old were you?
11.
Yeah, see, I give a pass. 11-year-old kid.
It was an All-Star game, and I was always a fan of Fenway Park. I think Fenway Park is a really cool stadium regardless of the Red Sox or not.
I agree with that. I didn't have an appreciation for Fenway Park until I went there and I was in my 20s. But I never had the appreciation for it until I went there and I was there. I'm like, this place is awesome. I hate everybody in here, but this place is awesome. You're an 11 or 12 year old kid wearing a hat. Like, I got zero issue with that. It's just, that happens all the time. I look at my old hat collection from when I was a kid. I have it in a box somewhere and there's like all sorts of hats. Like, I would collect the hats. So people are
with the sweat stains, the old hats with the sweat stains.
Yeah. You know, I would rip out all the mesh on the inside and I would write, like, I have a hat that says Nirvana on the inside of the brim.
Ooh, Nirvana fan.
Yeah,
huh?
I was a Georgetown Hoyas fan when I was in middle school because of the Big East for whatever reason. I don't know why. I liked Alonzo Mourning. So when you're in middle school, it's like it doesn't matter. You like sports.
Anything flies in.
Yeah, exactly.
I hope we answered your question, Judah. All right, last mailbag question is from Andy in Connecticut, and he says, what do you guys think of the new stadium renovations? I'm talking about Yankee Stadium, not Steinbrenner Field. I think the stuff done out in center field could be kind of cool. He's talking about the new party deck areas that are to the left and right of the Mohegan Sun Sports Bar, took out some bleacher seats, took out the obstructed view bleacher seats, which was
thank God
a long time coming. I mean, I don't know how you build a $2 billion stadium with obstructed seats, but the Yankees somehow did that. I'm really looking forward to going. I know people freaked out for whatever reason when those changes were announced, which I thought was stupid. They're improving the stadium. That's the idea anyway. I'm sure it's still going to affect their bottom line. They're going to make more money somehow. Regardless, I am looking forward to going and checking out the new areas of the stadium.
Yeah, it's fine. You know, you have to keep your stadium up to date. People are taking when you have a family and you're going to kids, like sometimes the kids don't want to sit there and watch the games, which I would make my kid sit there and watch the game, but they have like a play area. They made the technology, the networking, I think all better. And the fact that there's another bar, you can still watch the game and hang out on a party deck. Like, that's cool. I got no problem with that. You can still watch the game while you're doing that. I like that.
The Mohegan Sun Sports Bar, that deck is actually a really cool vantage point at the stadium. Yeah. So now you have more space out there.
Yeah, that's where we saw Judge's home run come right. It was coming right at us. It was pretty awesome.
If you zoom in on when Judge's home run is going over the fence, you could see us. Yeah.
So I got no problems with it. I mean, why wouldn't they improve the stadium? Of course they're going to improve the stadium. If you don't think they're going to improve the stadium, you're being naive to that. I think people will get their panties in a bunch when they announce that before we announce any free agent signings and all that other stuff, because they announced this first because they got to fill some time with some new stuff, right? But there's no news on the field at that point, and the team has not been good recently, so people get their they go up in arms about things like that. So,
well, it's like anything else. Whenever you make an announcement or make a change, the first reaction amongst a group of people is let's revolt.
Yeah. I still think they need to get rid of the legend seating. They need to get rid of the exclusivity of all that crap.
The moat. I hate
they
the
got
moat.
To get rid of all that. That's
it
the biggest
looks
thing.
So the moat in between the legend seating and the actual seating looks so bad, not only on TV, but when you're there, it just seems so non-intimate.
Yeah, that's one thing that they have to do at some point. They got to get rid of it. And I know
I don't think they're gonna, because that tunnel goes down to like where you can get, if you're a luxury box ticket holder, you can go under that tunnel. You can like get all your concessions and everything. That's where the waiters come out and hand you your stuff.
Ugh, waiters.
I've never sat in the legend seat, so I wouldn't
even know. I wouldn't
Long
know how
Trust
to act.
Doesn't want me sitting in the legend.
I was gonna say, I wouldn't know how to act there.
Trust me. All right, thanks everyone who submitted mailbag questions. If you want to do so, go to bronxpinstripes.com/podcast. You can call the voicemail line at 646-480-0342. Tweet us at Yankees Podcast. My Twitter handle is at Andrew_Rotondi. Scott's is at Scott Reinen. And again, that 25% off fan shop code was Severino. Severino for all those people who can't spell. Scott. Any last words?
Another week of overreactions. Let's see what this pitching staff does. So, more live baseball. I'm pumped up. The season is getting hyped up just like I expected it to.
Good stuff. Have a good week, everyone. Hey, guys. Thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.